Hey, welcome to the new CNADHD podcast. I'm your host, Liz Lewis, and I don't want to produce another boring podcast.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you go in iTunes, there are like 100 podcasts now about ADHD. Seriously, do it. Look, you'll be shocked. And I don't want to do the same thing that everybody else is doing. The CNADHD podcast is your place to get the best information and hear from the best experts in the field of ADHD. I take all this information and I make it understandable, actionable, and hopefully a little fun. It does not suck.
Welcome back to CNADHD. I was so excited to do today's episode because it involved two of my favorite guys. Ari Tuckman, Dr. Ari Tuckman. You may know him. He's kind of famous and I kind of internet stalked him for like three-ish years. He's the author of More Attention, Less Deficit. He also wrote Integrative Treatment for Adult ADHD, and he has a new book called ADHD After Dark, and it's all about sex, which, whether we like to admit it or not, we are all interested in sex. And if we can talk about sex and ADHD, all the better. Am I right? I asked him to meet with me and my husband. And my husband kind of agreed to it and didn't know what to expect. And I was totally surprised when Dr. Tuckman said, sure, I'll meet with you and record a podcast. So we did. And it was so fun. And it's a great conversation. There is nothing explicit in this podcast recording, but you might want to hit pause if you have little ears in the car with you or something, because we are going to talk about sex. So grab a beverage, a cocktail if you need one, and listen in to the conversation the Hubs and I had with Dr. Ari Tuckman.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Tuckman.
Thanks. I'm really psyched to be here and I'm happy to have this conversation.
Well, now that you see me, do you remember me?
I do.
From the conference?
I do.
Okay, good. Okay. I was really excited when you said you were doing the book. I have it here. I told him to read it.
And unfortunately, I have not yet. You might want to introduce me as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Hubs is here. Everyone knows him, though. People like him better than me.
Okay. See, here's the thing. I have a joke that the joke I have about the book, like the subtitle should be, this is the only book on ADHD your husband will actually read. And like, you're ruining my joke. You're killing me here.
Sorry.
No,
it's the only book you'd consider reading.
I actually think you would read it. I think I'm actually, and I wanted to ask you about this. I know you started with a survey, correct?
I did.
So why did you, what made you do the survey in the first place?
So, you know, I knew I wanted to write this book on how ADHD impacts a couple's sex life and relationship more broadly. And the problem is there's like no research on this. But, you know, if you're talking about sex, basically you can assume the answer is there is no research on that. So rather than just make a lot of stuff up, which I'm always happy to do, I figured let's see what people actually have to say. Like, let's get some real numbers on this and let's see what it tells us. So I put together this giant survey of 72 questions, which incidentally is way too many questions to ask people in an online survey, especially when half of them are distractible and get bored easily. But, you know, amazingly, to certainly not to my credit, 3,000 people filled it out. And I think what it speaks to is the fact that there is very much an interest in this topic and that it's not being addressed anywhere else. So what it did is it gave me this enormous data set that I could do all sorts of analysis on and extract out all sorts of interesting and useful lessons.
I think I would have had you fill out the survey for me, probably.
Thanks. I guess I would have.
You would have. Yeah, he totally would have. So we are like a mixed couple. I think that's what they call them, mixed couples.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely have ADHD and you definitely do not. And, well, I'll ask you, do you think it's like that my headspace, do you think that is an issue in our sex life? I'm just going to ask.
We've, you know, 10 years of marriage, yes, it became more recognizable to me the longer we were together. So, yes, I can see the I don't know if it's correlation or what the word is, but I see the evidence of it.
Okay.
Well, actually, let me ask a more nuanced question. So there's kind of two parts to this. So the one is, how does it affect your sex life during the time that you're actually having sex? But then also, how does it affect your sex life in terms of getting around to having the time and the good feelings towards each other to have sex? Because that's a different situation.
Okay. So during... this, as you might be able to figure out, this is not easy to discuss with, you know, strangers.
Oh, he's heard some, of course.
I'm doing the best I can. So during lack of eye contact, hard to know if she is interested in enjoying. There's a certain lack of flexibility, you know, we have a routine. And mm-hmm. that's probably no different than many married couples, period. But if we want to, I'll say, spice things up, I have to give considerable advance notice so she can process that and decide if that's something we want to try. So
right. I got to send a memo.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it can be challenging, and I've learned to just understand it's not me, but it's different. And kind of playing into that, the structure, we you know, well, it doesn't help that I travel as much as I do right now for work, but we have to schedule.
Essentially. Yeah.
There's not a lot of spontaneity. As much as I'd like to, you know, if we happen to be kid free for an evening, I can't just, you know, get naked in the kitchen and say, let's go.
Mm-hmm. But you try.
I try, but it doesn't happen. So,
kudos to you.
Yeah.
So does that sound typical of what you hear? Because I know that there are some gender differences mm-hmm. in couples when the woman has ADHD and the man does. Does that sound typical?
Right. Yeah. Well, so it does matter, and the two couples can be different in their sex lives depending on which partner has ADHD. So, and obviously that's at the level of group averages. So any couple is its own two people, but yeah, I mean, one of the things I did find is that women more so than men, and women with ADHD more so than women without ADHD, tend to get more distracted during sex. Not necessarily to the point that it's a deal breaker, but it just sort of, it's a thing that happens more. And also a bit more difficulty kind of like mentally transitioning into being sexual. So transitioning from all the rest of the stuff of life, the mundane grind of life, to then, okay, here we are, just you and me. So I don't know. I mean, it sounds, as you're describing it, that sort of sounds like a bit of what's going on there.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
Well, and I will say it is a transition. Like, you have to plan it ahead. And then if I am, this is part of the issue, is we tend to watch like Handmaid's Tale or something in the evening, which is not a turnoff. And then.
It really isn't.
Yeah.
And then.
Well, I think we've identified the problem.
And so then you will just stand up and be like, I'm going to bed. And you walk back there, and it's really hard for me to just be like, oh, okay, like, it's time to go back, it's time. And so I will end up sitting out there by myself for like 30, 40 minutes until I remember that you've left and you've gone down the hall. And then I'll come down the hall, and it is funny. It is very funny.
Yeah.
But often you are reading, and then you'll say, I'm naked. Like, yeah. And I'm just like...
See, this kind of reminds me of Billy Crystal has this line where he says, you know, women need a reason to have sex. Men just need a place. Right.
Yeah.
Now, granted, that's an oversimplification, but sort of like, well, I'm ready. Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I understand that. I mean, the man's brain, when it comes to sex, we're much more simple. It's just how we are.
Well, and you can transition in a second. Like, I can't transition my left foot to my right foot. So for me to switch, like, task shift, and I know it sounds silly, like, the task shift from the living room or, like, watching a show to going to bed and being sexual, for me, that's a huge task shift.
Yeah.
And I have trouble with that, getting there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
So the sort of, like, obvious to say, harder to do advice then is, if there is a bit of an intention or at least a desire to have sex that night, that to sort of think ahead about how do we get from here to there and to sort of build some of that stuff in, so that there is the time, so that there is the sort of working together towards it or something, so that you're more likely to get there. And some of that's an ADHD thing, but some of that's just everybody, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, it's a matter of kind of keeping the eye on the prize. Cause I know, like, for me, like, I don't know, like, my wife and I'll get stuck watching the news cause it's that, like, car crash you can't look away from. And then by the end of watching the news, you just want to kill yourself. You don't actually want to, like, you know, be sexual with each other. So it's like,
yeah, ours would be, ours is a Dateline because it's on.
Oh.
All the time.
Right.
And it's just, there's always a Dateline episode, and they're always about a spouse murdering the other spouse. And that's right. Really, that's not a turn on.
But it is a good incentive to please your spouse and make sure that they're not going to murder you in your sleep, right? So, like, you know, yeah. There's that.
Yeah. I do question when she asks me how much life insurance I have, but.
Right. Wow. Right. Good night.
Nice.
Right. And then you're Googling, what does arsenic taste like?
Well, I will say the one thing we have going for us is that we do totally laugh about sex all the time. And what did I say to you a couple of weeks ago? I was like, you know, dogs have sex and cats have sex and turtles have sex. I don't understand why Americans are so weird about sex.
Yeah.
So we do laugh a lot about
we
sex.
Do.
And he does harass me, but it's very, you know.
It's kind of, it's just comical.
It is very funny.
Yeah. but that's the thing of it, is that it, because it is comical, like, that there's a sense that there is a boundary there for you. So you, Liz, you don't feel threatened by it. You don't feel like you can't say no. So it becomes another thing that you sort of connect over, which is a good thing then in terms of then connecting better sexually when that's the thing that you're doing. So, you know, so it all becomes part of that process. And I think that ultimately, you know, given the fact that the number of times that we have sex that results in a birth is incredibly low, like, sex is much more, it's much less about procreation than it is about kind of recreation, or than it is about kind of like the social relationship aspect of it, you know? So it's one of the ways that couples stay connected together, do well together, maintain positive feelings as they deal with all the annoyances of life and all the other disagreements and things that we can fight over. So, like, it is important, and it's important to keep it as a positive and not be yet another negative in the relationship. So the fact you guys keep it fun is part of what makes it a positive for you.
Yeah. I'm glad it's that way, because I've had a couple girlfriends tell me that, like, when I made some comment about my husband always harassing me, I had a couple friends just say, really? Like, I wish we were playful. And I'm like, oh, that's not a normal thing? I guess not everybody's
about it.
I don't know.
We know a couple that from the outside, everything looked great. Apparently their intimacy was almost nil.
Yeah.
It just didn't exist. So, yeah, we are fortunate that joking about it keeps it relevant and interesting for both of us.
Yeah. Well, and that really is the thing, like, because it's so easy, especially in long-term relationships, for it to just sort of fall off the radar. Like, maybe not necessarily with an intent to do so, it just sort of drops away. So, you know, like, all of this is to say that to some extent, we need to be much more intentional about keeping it a bit more front and center, as opposed to when you're first dating, you can't stop yourself from keeping it front and center, you know, but that only lasts a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
The good old days.
Right.
Good old days. Yeah. But, okay, well, that's a good way to transition to this. I wanted to ask you, I have some of your notes that you shared with me. I was really interested in this one slide. It basically, people with ADHD, did I share this to you? They tend to rate higher on desired sexual frequency, even the women, masturbation, porn, kinkiness, history of infidelity, and consensually non-monogamous activities. Look at you looking at this. You're like, And the reason I wanted to bring it
up. Should have read the book.
Yeah.
See what you're missing?
I just thought this was fascinating because most of the women that I talk to in support groups are more like me along the lines of, first of all, some of us have some sensory stuff. I don't even like to be hugged. You know how I am. I like my space. In bed, we have a pillow between us. And it's not, like, I don't do it to be mean. I just like my physical space. So for some of us, when there's sensory stuff, and when your medication wears off in the evening, and all of that sort of comes together, it's really hard for me to just be like, okay, yes, I am super sexual right now. And so this whole sexual frequency thing was fascinating to me.
Right.
Because if you ask me, sex or sleep?
Oh, you're going to take sleep.
I mean, yeah, everything. So what's that about? Like, is it, I don't know. I just don't get it. Am I thinking?
No.
So
no, there's no kink.
Right. Well, so this is at the level of group averages, you know, so any one person could fall at various points on that, you know, distribution curve. But overall, what I found is that when I looked at the survey and it pulled out like the 12 questions that had some sort of relationship to sexual eagerness, as I called it, the folks with ADHD rated themselves higher on 10 out of 12 of them. And on the two they didn't rate higher, they tied. So the non-ADHD partners didn't rate higher on any of them. Now, I should specify, this is women with ADHD versus women without, men with ADHD versus men without. The men tended to score higher on almost all of them than the women did. And there's various reasons for that. But so I think, so what it speaks to is that folks with ADHD are more kind of sensitive to, more aware of, more influenced by sexual stimuli. And that could be around them, but it also could also be from within their head, you know? So just as they're more influenced by other stimuli in the world around them. So I think it's just part of that. But as far as I know, this is really the first place that has ever been found. And given the sort of consistency of the results, I think it really, like, I think it's real. I think that is a real thing on the level of averages again.
I just think that's really interesting. And with men, is it more of the, I don't know, the porn or the infidelity, or is it both sexes? I don't.
Yeah, no, it's for men and for women. So there were some of them, there are two of them that was more true for women than men, or it was true for the women with ADHD, was not true for the men with ADHD versus men without. I think one of them, I can't remember off the top of my head, but there are a couple of them that were more true just for the women. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, so on the one hand, this greater sexual eagerness can be a real strength in a relationship because at least somebody's keeping it front and center. And if they can do well together with it, this is a really great thing. On the other hand, it can also be a source of strife and disappointment if the couple is not connecting well together and, you know, not able to do, you know, not able to have a good sex life together.
So I should continue with my playful advances.
Right. You are the steward for the relationship is really what we're saying here.
Yeah.
For you. So
I should look forward to when the child is out of the house, getting naked in the kitchen, just keep doing it until something works.
I think basically you should never be dressed once you get home. I think that's really where we're going here.
And people wonder why I want a king size bed.
Right.
People, you know.
Yeah. Right. Is there a larger bed that we could get?
Yeah, it's called the the Lucy and Desi yeah. where they had the two single beds.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. One of the other things I wanted to ask you about, and maybe you will have something to say about this because you have asked me about this specifically, do you feel that I put enough effort into managing the ADHD? Because I know that sometimes it can be difficult because we don't have a really bad parent-child dynamic, but every so often I'll say to you, you sound like my mother, or you sound like, you
know. Yeah.
And I know you asked me a few weeks ago about how different I am during the day on medication and the way I am in the evenings when it wears off.
Yes. So
that's a big question.
Overall, I think you are good at managing it, but it frustrates me when you don't take a pill on a Saturday or Sunday because you're trying to ensure your supply doesn't run out before the next prescription can be filled. And I think that's just, I think that's a bad way to go about it. I think the medication, you have it for a reason, it helps, and I don't think you should skip doses. So I find that frustrating.
So just Saturdays, that's all?
Well, any day that you skip, take it.
Well, sometimes I just forget. On vacation, well, I just forgot.
Yeah, and that's understandable. Sometimes you forget, but when you consciously skip, I think that's just a bad idea because it does make a difference. It does help you manage everything going on.
Okay. So there's definitely a difference.
Yes. Yeah. When you first started on the medication, there was a noticeable difference before and after. And I like the medicated version.
He likes me better medicated. I don't know.
Okay. Well, it's better than self-medicating all the time. Right?
That's true. It's better than self-medicating.
Yeah. And we all know people that do that
yes.
for various reasons. And that never ends well. So
that's true.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the medication works. Like, let's be really, really clear about it. The medication is quite effective for ADHD. And, you know, that's something I found in the survey. People found it the most effective treatment. But this is something we have tons and tons of other research on. And that it does work. Like, it is indeed effective. So it makes your day go better in lots of different ways. But, you know, coming in terms of the survey, you know, I gave people a list of 25 potential barriers to a better sex life. And the five least endorsed barriers to a better sex life had to do with the sex itself, meaning, you know, I don't know how to please my partner. My partner doesn't know how to read me sexually. I'm not, you know, sexually attracted to my partner. So stuff like that. So basically, once people have sex, it tends to be pretty good. Nine of the biggest barriers had to do with either not enough time, because it wasn't, so things like there would be more time for sex if it was managed better, you know, we don't get into bed at the same time, kind of things like that, or has to do with like sufficient good feelings, meaning, you know, being too angry at each other or feeling like your partner is too angry at you or things like that. And if the medication makes the day go better, it makes it more likely that the night will go better and the night will end well, shall we say. So I think that's kind of what you're speaking to there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in other words, if you want to leave you alone at night, don't take your meds in the morning, and then he'll be so annoyed. He'll, there you go. That's not the lesson learned here.
No, I'm still going to be naked in the kitchen.
Right.
You don't actually threaten to get naked in the kitchen. It's more just, do you want to have day sex? The kid's not here. Like, it's that stuff. And I can't have, I'm very rigid. You know I'm very rigid. So to have that thrown into the middle of my days.
So if I know that he's not, the kid's not going to be home, can I put it on the calendar? Would that work?
Well, you know what? You have better chances if you give me a heads up. Yeah.
All right. There you go. I learned something today.
Sweet. However funny God. I think this all is, my wife would find it equally not funny. So so yeah, we're in the same boat.
Oh, God. Well, I saw something, and I have it written on here. should people be, I mean, you're away, but should people be having more sex? Like, I saw somewhere that, like, the average couple is, like, one or two times a week or something.
So, yeah, for the, when the man has ADHD, they have sex 1.1 times per week on average. When the woman has ADHD, it's 1.4. So the women, like we said, you know, a little bit more sexually similar. So they're having sex a little bit more. The desired frequency was like 2 to 4 times a week on average. So, and I should specify that is with their partner, not necessarily with somebody else. Right. So yeah, I think that, you know, what it speaks to is for most couples, they're not having it as much as they would like. You know, they would prefer to have it more often.
But that's probably not much different than non-ADHD couples,
yeah.
Right?
That's true across the board. So, yeah. But, you know, it's not about frequency. It's about quality. And are you having the amount that you would like to have? And, you know, you guys have a particular constraint of one of you travels. Other couples have other constraints for other reasons. So, like, sometimes that just is what it is. You know, it's part of the package of life. You know, I would think it's more a matter of, do we feel like we are each doing what we can to make the most of the times that we do have? You know, like, we can all be adults and accept the fact that sometimes it's not on the table. But when it is a possibility, do I feel like you're doing your part? Do you feel like I'm doing my part to make this a priority and to make it happen often enough?
Do you think that my inconsistent sort of, do you think I use my time efficiently? In the evening, I mean. Do I use my time efficiently, like our family time? Because I do feel like a lot of times, it says, gets pushed later into the night on here. So that definitely is an issue.
Some days are better than others, but yeah, there are certainly times where it's more obvious that you're not efficiently getting the things done that you need to do. And you get sidetracked on multiple things instead of just focusing and finishing one task. And I think that then causes you to come to bed later than me, and be less likely to want to get intimate because you still have too many things going through your mind.
Well, yeah, and when I'm unmedicated, well, first of all, I often start something early in the day, and then it'll occur to me at 10 o'clock at night that I left laundry downstairs.
Right.
So I have to go downstairs, and I got to get the laundry. And I come upstairs, and then I'm like, I have that one more thing syndrome where I'm like, one more thing. I'm going to return that email. I'm going to do this. Yeah. I'm going to do that. And then by the time I get back there, I'm kind of ping-ponging around. Like, what else did I forget to do? Like, I'm sort of thinking about the dog, or I'm thinking about the laundry, or I'm thinking about something else. And you're like, I'm naked.
I'm the only thing you should be thinking about right now.
Yeah. Pay attention to me. Yeah.
Well, and again, back to my travel, I got limited time, so I got to be naked when I can.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, but you know what? I can't use that as an excuse because even if I wasn't traveling, I'd still be the same.
Yeah.
Right.
You probably would be.
But
yeah,
for what it's worth, like, but there is truth in what you're saying, because there are days that are X'd off of the calendar because you're not there. It does make those days that you are that much more precious, so to speak. So you don't want to lose the opportunity. So I guess, you know, the recommendation that I would make is, rather than suddenly being naked at 10 p.m., is to do a check-in at 8 of, you know, like, okay, where are we at? What needs to be done? And, you know, on the one hand, for you to maybe pitch in or do a little bit of structuring, you know, for Liz to sort of stay on track and get some things done, and for you to knock a few things off. But, you know, I think, Liz, for your part, also to recognize that if you wait to have sex until everything is done, you will never have sex. Like, that day never comes, you know, that there comes a point where you just need to sort of cut and run and say, you know what? That sucks that laundry is still downstairs, but it'll still be there tomorrow, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't do that well. I don't know where to cut it off. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I am inconsistent in a lot of things, which is probably difficult. You know, I'm very inconsistent. And I'm not very I'm not very affectionate. I'm not a cuddler.
Well, I don't know. I've seen you cuddle with a dog.
Yes, I do cuddle with a dog. But it's a weird thing with me. And I will say, and earlier you said something about, or maybe Ari did, something about, you know, when couples first get together, they have sex all the time. And I've been thinking, this is terrible, but I'm just going to admit it. Even before I was with you, like, I think that in my 20s, in order for me to be intimate, I think I was self-medicating. I think for many years in my relationships, I would, like, drink a glass of wine so that I could come down enough to, like, be with somebody. And now that I don't drink really anymore, but well, I have the medication, now I'm feeling the difference in myself. Like,
so that plays into how we actually got together. We first met.
Oh, God.
We met because of drinking.
Well,
I mean, it was a party, you know? It was a drunk bus.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, for what it's worth, you by no means invented this thing of having alcohol in order to feel sexually comfortable. So, you know, so that's definitely a thing. And, you know, on the one hand, I don't know, like if it's a glass of wine or a Manhattan or a beer or something, and then it's just a better night, fine, whatever. There are worse vices as long as it's within some reason. But
it's not like she's doing meth. I mean,
right.
Oh, it's God. A glass of wine.
Right.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, and certainly in our youth, you know, in our young adulthood, like we're less comfortable in ourselves. We don't know what we want. We don't know how to ask for it. We're not sure as much what we're doing for the other person. We're not as confident. So, you know, especially in like in hookup culture, there is a lot of freaking drinking going on in college and young adult hookup culture, which makes you wonder, like, why do they need to be so wasted to do this thing? You know, why can't they be sober when they do it? So, so, you know, I think that as we get older, and particularly if we've been with someone for a while, I think we become more comfortable, more confident, and we don't necessarily need that, you know, crutch in the same sort of a way.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So I saw on here somewhere, here we go, put in the necessary effort. How does one, I'm not good at self-directed action, like putting in the effort. I mean, you already harassed me during the day, so I remember that I have to have sex. But I need to sort of make it a priority, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how's that done?
Well, so I think it's done in the same way that anything is kept as a priority, which is that we sort of, and this is easy to say, but we sort of hold it in mind and allow that to be sort of like North Star that pulls us forward through our day, you know, that we're doing other tasks sort of in relation to that ultimate goal. You know, so if the goal is we want to be in bed at 9, in bed and in the right frame of mind or whatever the time is, but let's say 9 o'clock, you know, how am I structuring my day here at 9 a.m., here at noon, here at 5, so that I can get to that ultimate goal?
Oh, maybe I need a bedtime. Like I need a time that I have to stop doing other stuff, maybe.
It's a good idea. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Well, what about when you're not here? When you're not here, though, it's going to go all...
Nope, you should still have that same structure.
Yeah, ideally. Well, and that's the thing is, you know, and this is a conversation I've had with lots of clients where if bedtime kind of, if there's no like hard deadline on it, then the day, it just sort of wanders until it eventually ends, you know? But having a bedtime, whatever it is, it does then provide some structure potentially for the rest of the day and certainly the night. So a lot of my clients who are terrible about sleep, this is often where it begins. Like they don't actually have a specific bedtime. So things just sort of take as long as they take and lots of other random crap like Netflix and whatever gets added in, which adds time.
Okay. I never considered the fact that I should just pick a time and it should be like the bedtime. That never entered my mind. So that's something I can try. Do you have other questions for him? he knows a lot about people like me. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. I need to read the book.
Probably.
Because that's probably going to answer all my questions.
Yeah. So here's a really interesting thing that, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting stuff, I think, that came out of the survey, but here's something that I think is really interesting. I looked at, so I asked people, how much effort do you yourself put in to managing ADHD, which could be your own ADHD or your partner's ADHD, depending on who you are. Then I asked, how much effort do you think your partner puts in? And not at all surprisingly, people rated their own effort as higher than their partner's. And partly that's because it's a thing of like, I know every single thing I do, but I only know what I see you do, or if I see some evidence of you having done it, you know? So it's like our partners don't get credit for what we're not aware of. So on the one hand, I think what this speaks to is we need to have some conversations about what we're each doing here, so that we're both aware and throw a little bit of benefit of the doubt on the pile. And hopefully that's coming back the other way. But interestingly, beyond that kind of generally kind of good advice, here's the sort of big motivator of this is the couples, the folks who felt that their partner put in the most effort on managing ADHD had sex 60% more often than the folks who felt their partner put in the least effort. So 92 times a year versus 55. And I think it, on the one hand, the direct effect is if you manage it, if ADHD is better managed, it has less of a negative effect on your sex life and relationship overall. So there's that. But also the indirect effect is this sort of frustration and resentment of, you know, feeling like this would be better if only you would be putting in more effort, you know? So like that probably actually has a bigger corrosive effect on the couple's sex life. So if they felt their partner had the least, put in the least effort, they also felt that ADHD had the most negative effect on their sex life. So, you know, this sense of fairness, of parity, of equal effort is really important. And if you feel like your partner is not putting in enough effort, you need to have some conversations about it. Mm-hmm. And it'll get you laid more if you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think that in a lot of couples, and it's not something that you do to me, but I think in a lot of couples, there is an imbalance sometimes, especially I feel like because of my issues, I always say, oh, this is issues. Because of my stuff, I feel like you have to do a lot of like reminding, poking, prodding, like asking, like you'll text me when you're away and be like, did you take out the trash? Did you do, you know?
Right.
And you, in the past, you have actually, he has said to me, I don't want to like pretend to be your dad. I don't want to tell you what to do and be bugging you all the time. But I know sometimes I put you in a position where you have to almost like parent me. And I hate that. And that's a turnoff too. But I think we're good about it. Like in general, that's not our dynamic.
Yeah, well, as Ari was discussing this, I'm thinking to myself, do I put enough effort in? So
I feel like you, I feel like a lot of times I feel like you're managing me. You're managing me. If you're managing the house and you're managing all the things, and Liz is just trying to drive the kid, do all this stuff, like trying to make it work.
Don't discount all that because that's a lot all on its own. And, you know, we've said in the past that a marriage is a partnership. So ADHD or not, each person has to do their share and help the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly it. Like that is the key, is that recognizing we each bring different strengths to this relationship. And as I often tell clients when they're frustrated with the differences is you don't need a partner who's exactly like you. You've got that covered. You know, right. What you need is someone who brings something else to the party. And if the reminders are done in a friendly way and you don't mind doing it because you recognize the greater good, better a 4-second text about the trash than having the trash overflowing for a week, you know, and then you're pissed off and resentful, like, oh, great. As usual, freaking forgot to do the trash cans, right? And now you're an asshole. And now, you know, you're definitely not getting laid that night, no matter how naked you are in the kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to give it nicely and then you have to take the reminder nicely. to recognize this is not him being my dad. This is not here I am failing again. This is not like, to not go into some shame spiral or get defensive or say, of course I took out the trash, leave me alone or whatever, you know? So like, and to recognize that you, Liz, are bringing all sorts of other great strengths to the relationship. So like, we can balance each other out. It just has to be done as equals and done in a friendly kind of collaborative way, in that when it does become the parent-child dynamic, in other words, when it spills into too many places and there's too much nagging and there's too much hiding and covering up, like, forget it. Like, that's the death spiral, you know, and you are not having sex with a person that you're in a parent-child dynamic with. Like, that's just not a thing that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's not like I said, it's nothing that you do to me. It's my head. It's like stuff in my head,
right,
about our relationship not being equal. It's nothing that he says, mm-hmm, or does or implies. It's not that way. But I will say that that's one of my things is like, hey, Liz, if you don't make any money and the house is a really big mess and you're managing the kids' stuff, you better do something around here. Yeah, like. Sure.
That never crosses my mind.
I know, but it crosses my mind every day.
Yep. And I've heard this before, you know, where it's in one person's head, but it's not in the others. So my advice is actually talk about it, because it may be that the stuff that you think is important to him isn't actually what's important to him, you know? So you could be fretting and sweating over stuff that he doesn't even care about.
Yep.
Yeah, that happens a lot, actually. Yeah, I get all bent out of shape over stuff he doesn't care about at all. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the lesson is you just got to have that conversation. And, you know, then if there is something that he cares about, put your energy into that, not fretting over this other stuff.
Makes sense.
Okay. All right, boys. It's like me sitting here with these two. And neither of you even have ADHD. It's like me sitting here with the two of you neurotypical boys. Here. All right. Well, I'm really glad that you wrote the book. And a lot of people, I don't know if you realize this, but a lot of people really like your other books.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this will be interesting to them. And let's face it, even if they pretend like they're not, everybody is interested in sex. Yeah. Other people's sex lives, like, it's, I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting. And you're going to discuss this at the conference, right?
I am. So at the CHAD conference this year, I'm doing a presentation on this specifically.
Okay, that's what I thought. And I'm always bugging people about the conference too. So,
well, if you do a follow-up to this book, I think Liz and I should be on the cover.
Right. I'll do it.
We can be cover models. That would be fun. That would be super fun.
Now, wait, are you going to be all naked, right, in the kitchen, though? Is that where you're going with this?
I can't promise I won't.
Well, yeah, I think I that'll sell more copies. So, so let's hope.
Well, this was super fun. Thank you for doing it.
Well, but this was great. This was like super fun. And I think that it has exactly the right tone of how we want to be discussing this stuff, that it shouldn't be fraught conversations. Like, it should be funny and we should be laughing about things and kind of feeling good about each other. So this was great.
Yep, I agree. I'm glad I get it.
You were all like tense because you didn't know who he was or anything, and it was fine.
It's not always easy to talk about sex with strangers. So right.
I actually think it's easier to talk about sex with strangers. I think. I don't know.
It can be. And I think I'm going to call my next book Naked in the Kitchen. So.
I'll be looking for it. Thanks.
Right.
Okay. I don't know if you could hear this at the very end, but Dr. Tuckman said he's going to do a cookbook and we're going to call it Naked in the Kitchen. And we were just joking around about that at the end. I was so focused on the crappy audio for the Hubs and I that I forgot to ask Dr. Tuckman to say his contact information. So I'm going to link to his website. I'm going to link to all of his books on Amazon. Before and after talking to Dr. Tuckman, I got really curious because there just isn't a lot of research around ADHD and sex. So I've been doing some of my own research. I'm going to put out a written post at some point with Dr. Tuckman's book, but also including some other reading that I've done on the topic. So look for that coming up. And as we discussed, he's going to be talking about ADHD After Dark, his research, and all that good stuff at the conference. And I have to take a moment to plug the conference. I've talked about this before. The conference is in Philadelphia this year. It is November 6th through 9th. I cannot say enough about how much fun the conference is. It is absolutely not just for doctors and clinicians and coaches. It is for anybody. And we have some really fun stuff planned this year, especially for first timers and even younger people in their early 20s, just making their way in the world with an ADHD diagnosis. It's going to be so much fun. You have to come. Yes, I'm constantly plugging the conference. It's just, that's how I am. Sorry. This fall, I am just doing so many exciting things. If you want to connect with me, you can email me, healthyadhd@gmail.com. You can find me under the same handle, healthyadhd, on Instagram, or just come and join the enclave because we like to have a good time over there. Like I always say, we are stronger together.